Calling all lovers of mystery. Prepare to don your detective hat in June's Journey, a free, hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective who is on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. Take a trip in time to the glitzy 20s to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. If, like me, you get sad when a story comes to a close, never fear. With June's Journey, the thrill is endless, since new chapters are added weekly. And not only can you enjoy the detective adventure, but you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island, where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Sarah Michelle Gellar, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Welcome to We Stand Together, an academic pop culture symposium. We are the pop culture professors.
You sure nailed that. I'm Caitlin Bitsagai.
I'm Lauren Brickman, and we're back in our virtual classroom this week.
Yeah, smart people, dumb topics.
That's right. Somehow, by the grace of God, Caitlin and I earned master's degrees, and
God was heavenly involved, because there wasn't a lot on earth that made sense of it.
No. And somehow he was on our side again when he helped us get hired to then teach at the college
being
level.
Teachers.
You know, some of us are in the middle of finals right now.
Yeah.
And if any of my students are listening to this podcast who have not turned in your final assignment, stop listening to this podcast and turn in your assignments. I have grading to do, guys. Please turn it in.
Turn it in.
And gals.
Jeremy.
Come on, folks.
Jeremy, turn it in.
Turn it
in. I'm sure there's a Jeremy. There's always a Jeremy.
There's always a Jeremy. And Jeremy's never turning in his work. So, Jeremy. You know, be kind. Be kind to your professors, y'all. You hate turning in homework. We hate doing grading. Let's just help each other out.
No,
but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about stanning. In this classroom, we talk about stanning,
absolutely,
which is being an obsessive fan of something. And Caitlin, I got to know, what are you stanning this week?
Okay, I got a new show for you, Lauren. I got a new show, so I expect to hear from you tomorrow that you've finished the entire series. It's called Man Like Mobeen. It is a British show with a Muslim Pakistani lead. It was created by Guz Khan. It's a comedy, and it's just a sitcom about Mobeen and his two friends and his young sister that he's raising and their shenanigans over in Britain. And it's very funny.
Where am I going to find this show?
Netflix.com.
Netflix.com. That's N-E-T-F-L-I-X.
Mm-hmm. .com. They actually have an app.
Okay. I know how to download apps. This sounds good. Okay, no, this sounds great. I probably will watch it all tonight because that is my illness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what have you been standing?
I'm back standing something. I've stand on this podcast before, but I just loved the mid-season finale so much. I'm standing Good Trouble on Freeform once again, folks.
She's doing it again.
I'm doing it again. I'm back on my bullshit. But Good Trouble just had their season 3 mid-season finale. That's right, mid-season, because on Freeform, we love to give you half a season, then take a break because they're masochists. But if anyone is watching Good Trouble, which if you are 15 to 22, you probably are. But my favorite character has been Dennis, one of my favorite characters. I love all the characters, but Dennis, one of my favorite characters. He was dealing with grief. A big reason I love him, you know, on this show, you've heard us talk about it. We love when characters and people talk about their grief openly and deal with it, process it. But he's been off in Malibu processing the grief. And in the last moment, in an epic fashion of this finale, he comes back at the worst possible time to declare his love for a character. And it was beautiful and heart-wrenching because the timing is so painful. That's what the show should be really called. It's not Good Trouble. It's Bad Timing.
Oh, love those shows.
I love it. But it's fun to have, you know, off mic earlier before we were recording, Caitlin and I were talking about crushes. And I think the thing I like about Good Trouble is it's really just a bunch of people having crushes on each other. I love a good crush. I love a good ship.
It's fun. You love a good ship. You love it.
Anyway, so that's where I'm at this week.
It's where you're always at.
Honestly, true. It's true. It's really, really true. But you know where else I'm always at?
Tell me.
Loving today's guest.
Oh,
our
okay.
guest today is so fabulous, so wonderful. Please welcome to the pod, Emma Ramos.
Oh, Good Trouble, everybody.
Emma, are you standing anything this week? Is there anything that you're obsessed with?
I'm standing this show on the new app, Netflix.
Oh, okay, great. Mm-hmm. I have the app.
Cool.
.com. this show called The Serpent.
Ooh. What is?
Oh, you don't know about it.
I haven't seen it.
It's not. It's like one of those shows that it's horrible.
Okay. I love. Alrighty, I love.
It's horrible because it's based on a true, awful event. And everybody's doing such a great job that you're just reliving the life of this man. You know about this diplomat and this like jewelry French dude in Bangkok that had whatchamacallit? This.
Nope.
I feel like they're going to hire me to promote the show.
Yeah. I honestly.
At the themes, at the name of the actors. I think it's bold.
I assumed that they reached out to book you on the show to promote Serpent.
Yeah, we got an email from the Serpent at Netflix.com saying we've got a girl.
Wow.
That was my pitch.
I love it.
And that's why I was hired to the PR.
Well, I guess I'll be spending the weekend with Netflix.com. Sounds like there's a lot of great material on this.
They have a couple more shows even.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, folks, I do also, before we jump into today's theme, do want to just take a moment to say, if you weren't aware, last week we celebrated National Nurses Day, but we're still, I believe the whole month of May is Nurses Month. Like,
oh, great.
It's like, this is the time of year where we celebrate nurses. And I do want to say, Emma, thank you for your service. You know, you play a nurse on New Amsterdam and nurses on TV as vitally important to healthcare system
representation.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I feel like people should just like stop me at every time I'm like walking outside the apartment and just say
thank you. Right. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure that you felt appreciated. Thank you for the work you do in the healthcare system on television.
Thank you so much. And I can't wait for you to be on set because I feel like every guest star, these are amazing actors that go to die on the show.
Right.
And there's nothing I love most than just trying to make them laugh as they have their like moment, you know? And I'm like, You know you're going to die. I mean, yeah. But I do a check-in. Wow. Prior. But thank you so much for that mention.
Yeah, no, of course. I just wanted to thank you.
If you guys need any, you know, advice, health-wise, okay. Yeah. I'm here. If you're pregnant, mm-hmm. I can do that too. I can bring the baby out of your body.
That's why I've been texting you all of my symptoms. I don't go to the doctor anymore. I just text Emma my symptoms and
I have vaccines too. Mm-hmm. Ready to go.
Great. You have multiple. Okay.
She's got a prescription pad. It is from the props department, but it's been working for me.
At Duane Reade, they don't know the difference.
They don't know the difference.
They just accept it.
Don't go to Walgreens. They are smarter.
Oh, they got their eyes. They got their eyes on those watermarks at Walgreens.
But shockingly, we're not here to talk about nurses, though we could talk about them all day long. Today, we're talking home on the road. And to kick off today's episode, I thought I'd throw out there some definitions of home that I found. You know, home can be a noun, it can be an adjective, it can be a verb. Some of the definitions I found were the place one lives permanently, especially a member of a family or household, a house, apartment, or other shelter that is the usual residence of a person. The place in which one's domestic affections are centered, relating to the place where one lives, to give shelter to harbor, to lodge. So I'm curious. Okay. That's sort of like, those are some thoughts that the internet gave us. But Caitlin, Emma, what are your definitions of home?
Yo, that definition is so heavy. Mm-hmm. It's just so heavy.
Okay.
I mean, if I was the word home,
okay,
and like all of a sudden woke up and like learned what the world thought about me, I would be like, just shoot me right now, because that's a lot of responsibility.
It's pressure. If you were the word
domestic,
home.
What did you say? Domestic what? Like you have to have.
In which ones all of those domestic affections are centered? That is a lot.
That is like. Yeah, like just you go home to, you know, poo and sleep, and that's mm-hmm. enough of a hurdle, you know. And it's a domestic encounter and a relational.
Okay.
I disagree.
Yeah, that's fair. Caitlin, any thoughts from you about what you think home is?
Well, now we know it's loaded. Now we know it's loaded.
Now we know for sure.
I don't think I have an interesting answer. I think it's just where you live.
But do you guys think that there's a difference between home and house?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I do, but I don't know that I experience it differently myself.
Yeah. I do. Like, to me, my house is still the house where my parents live, because I don't have, that's still my closest immediate family. So like, I consider like my parents' house, I don't have a house. My parents have a house, but like, I feel different when I'm in their house.
But is that your home then?
No, because my home is where I'm is my apartment where I live.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I don't have a house, but like, you know, apartment.
Yeah.
I have a question for both of you. So when you talk to your parents, do you say, "Mom, I'm going home," or do you have, "I'm going to my"?
I know what you mean. Place.
Here's the confusing thing about me. I will call anywhere I sleep home. I could be staying there for one night, and if I get tired, I'm like, I'm gonna go home. And that home,
a blind date.
Yeah.
You've lived on the subway after some drunken nights. That was your home.
Well, accidentally, that was my home. A sidewalk in the middle of Italy was once my home. But I've had many homes because I have famously often, I especially like, I've done a lot of like, I've been on the road for work, like we all have, and like truly like a shit tank in the middle of Pennsylvania, I'll be like, I gotta get home. And that's not my home, but it's my home.
Right.
You know,
it's home base.
I'll call anything a home. I'm crazy.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, Emma, we typically like to share with our listeners why not only were we interested in a topic, but like why we sort of feel like we have the credentials to talk about it, right? Like on the first day of class, your teacher always sort of is like, here are my credentials. Caitlin, you have a fun credential this week.
Well, you know, I have done some jobs outside of the tri-state area and had to relocate for a little bit. And one fun kind of like perma non-home home I had was in Atlanta, where I worked there for a year. And they set us up in this, I'll explain who that is, but set us up in this hotel called The 12, where me and another actor lived. And her name is Lucy, shout out. And like, it was funny because we would get moved around these different rooms and we had like a shorthand for what they were called. Like we call it like C room. We called one, umbrella. Like they had like just different designs and you'd get moved around. Sometimes you'd be like, oh, I'm an umbrella. And it was like this. The 12. And the 12 was, for Atlantans know, in a outdoor mall. So we also like lived at Ann Taylor Loft and a Publix at the same time. And it was just like very weird. And Atlanta, I love Atlanta. There's so much strange stuff going on there. Like the bar at the 12 was this hotspot for like C-list Atlanta celebrities. Like you would go in and someone would be like, that's Puffy's makeup artist. It's like, it was always like tangential, but like it always like a spark. And I probably will never live in Atlanta permanently. Probably prefer not to live at a hotel next to a Publix permanently, but I enjoyed it. It was a home away from home. They welcomed me and we had fun.
I love that. You know, I will reveal to the listeners that Emma pitched this theme and we sort of took it and ran. But I was trying to think of like when Kaylin and I were spitballing, I was like, well, what's my friggin' credit for this week? And then I realized I'm a road warrior. I'm going to say it. I've spent a lot of time in cars driving around this country and I have driven in so many different conditions. I have, you know, like many comedians, I've been in that van doing children's theater with 10 other comedians for days on end. I've been that person who woke up at 4 a.m. to drive back from one gig to get to another gig 10 hours away. Ugh. But I think the thing I'm maybe most proud of is this past December, I wanted to see my family and I was very nervous about the state of the world and wanted to be as safe as possible. So I wanted to get back to Oklahoma to help with my dad's recovery after surgery. And so I drove straight from New York to Oklahoma, stopping only for restrooms and gas. It was like a 27-hour trip and I slept in the car because truly, 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 your girl will make home anywhere. So that's my cred. That felt like a cred. But Emma, what do you think your creds are, or what made?
Well, like, I was going to say that I had a PhD on this situation, but we're taking it literally of home on the road. I'm not sure I can manage because I feel like it's so strange that you guys framed it home on the road, because I've been talking to mom about this. When I was a kid, I come from a family of like generations before me, like I would say at least 20 generations before me, people that are very proud about not moving, you know, about like ownership, this is our land.
Yeah.
My father's line, that they inherit this land that they've been passing on and just, you know, growing vegetables and just like feeding Mexico, feeding a little portion.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? So it's in my DNA when I was a kid that, oh, this home idea is limited. Mm. Now, I think that, thank God, I was like the internet kid too, that like my parents didn't, they weren't. So all of a sudden I was like, wait a minute, I can leave. And I don't know. That's why I was going to tell you guys that I was like, please talk to me, like look up to me, because I am above you. But then like Lauren just said that she slept in a car and I have slept in a car, but it was more like, I don't think if this counts. Okay. Yeah. You guys tell me if this counts. We were, heading to Disneyland. The first time I went to Disneyland with my parents. And this was like an 8-hour drive from Culiacan, which was where I was born, and then all the way up to where everybody knows Disneyland is. if not, please do not listen to this podcast. And go. So then we're driving and the van ran out of gas or something and we had to sleep in the van.
Amazing. Well, I think it's pretty obvious that Emma is an expert on this topic. She's got her PhD. We're bowing down. We are going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to put Emma's home on the road knowledge to the test and play our first game. We'll be right back.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
All right, y'all. We are warmed up. We're ready to go. And today, our first game, it's a classic. It's one we've been playing a lot lately, but it's so much fun. That's right. We're bringing back Pitch Fest. Emma, you've done quite a lot of TV acting. You get that world. And so I saw something in the headlines this week, and I thought it mashed up perfectly with today's theme. I'm not sure if you all saw this headline, but there is a new story broke this week that a teenager mistakenly moved into a senior living complex. And the story evolved on TikTok because there was this young girl, like 19 years old. Her name's Madison. And she became friends with a middle-aged woman on TikTok through the quarantine. And Madison, shout out, was living in my home state of Oklahoma. And speaking of home, did not feel like she really had a stable sense of family and home in Oklahoma. And so through her friendship with this middle-aged woman on TikTok, decided to move to this other woman's hometown. But because of the pandemic and because she'd never been there, this woman she met on TikTok arranged her living conditions for her, got her an apartment. She sent her pictures. They talked about it. She looked great. It took her about a week of living in this apartment, apparently, in her new town, to figure out that the reason she was the youngest person in this complex was that it was a senior living complex. And the woman that she had met on TikTok just sort of knew it was a fair housing thing. She was like, they couldn't deny you. I knew it. But so this teenage girl was living in a senior living complex because she had met the mom she always wanted on TikTok. Now, the moment I read this headline, I was like, well, this is either going to be a movie or a TV show. And we live in the world, if you didn't know this already, folks, apps like Wattpad, which is a fan fiction website, they have production studios. There is a pipeline from social media to your streaming services. And so this episode of Pitch Fest is TikTok Studios edition because, oh boy, we all know the story is getting greenlit. So Emma, your challenge today is to give us a title for this movie based on this 19-year-old girl living in a senior center. Let us know who you think should star in this vehicle and give us a log line or a little bit about sort of your vision for how to bring this story to life. Are you up for the challenge?
TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Madison. the person that we're going to follow is the older lady.
Okay.
That's the protagonist. Mm-hmm. Why? Mm-hmm. Why, you ask, executive? Well, I'll tell you. Because we need to focus and give attention and make our elder actors protagonists. Mm-hmm. So that's where I end my pitch. Yep. And then the log line would be, hold on. Can we go to commercial break now?
You came in so strong. You're doing great. You're doing great.
God damn. That title was great, right? Mm-hmm. Madison.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. It doesn't tell you anything, but like, I like one.
Yeah.
Okay. Log line. In a world.
Wow.
No. A story of home.
Okay.
A story of a young woman.
Mm-hmm.
It took Madison. Is that the name? Mandy?
Well, Madison's the young girl's name. Yeah.
Oh yeah. But we're gonna both are called Madison.
I love that.
I love that. I love the twist. I love this twist. Yeah,
that's a twist. So, she never knew that Madison, wink, wink, older Madison, could see through her because she was always looking to live with older people.
Wow.
Netflix.com.
Wow. Netflix.com.
Wow.
We need to do a South by South. We need to shoot a proof of concept. Mm-hmm.
This is great. This is great. I need to know though, Emma, who do you imagine as the dual Madisons? Who's older Madison? Who's younger Madison?
Great question. That's a great question. I'm available.
Mm-hmm. For which role? Because I feel like you could play both.
I could play both.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Because I think it's a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a comedy. Yeah. It could be a dramedy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because of course we have that depth mm-hmm. of like what it is to be home. Like it could start all like Kimmy Schmidt, you know, lady doody doody TikTok.
Yeah.
I have a horrible life in Oklahoma. I'm going to do TikTok, because that was the song for Kimmy Schmidt.
Mm-hmm. That's the exact song.
I loved it.
So we have that, and we have that vibe.
Mm-hmm.
But then Act Two, mm-hmm. obviously, we see her like the camera pans 360, and we see her realizing, wait a minute, this new home. I don't see any youngsters.
Yeah.
She was distracted because on the whole way, like Kimmy Schmidt.
Yeah. She's so living in her TikTok universe.
Wow.
She's not taking it
There's
in.
There's a lesson there.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I also say, as you were talking, and I absolutely vote for you playing both Madisons.
Yeah.
But you know who, as an executive producer, this script would come across their desk and they absolutely would also cast themselves in both roles? You know Jennifer Lopez is going to do that. You know Jennifer Lopez is going to cast herself as Madison and Madison.
Oh my God.
Do it all.
Right? I just feel like someone's like, oh, Jennifer, here's a producing project. She's like, you know what's more fun than just producing?
I'm still Madison from the block.
Mm-hmm.
I hear it. Yeah.
I just couldn't.
I love that the show is called Madison. And mm-hmm. and the fans on Reddit will debate fiercely which Madison the show is actually named
Ooh.
After. And maybe in the last episode we reveal. I don't know.
Wow. Wow. This is huge. I think Madison's going to be a big, big hit.
Guys, can we just do it?
Yeah.
We
have a pack?
Yeah, we can do it.
We have a pack here. I feel like we're developing a pilot as we speak. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that We Stand Studios is strong. we have thousands of pitches. We're still waiting for the networks to call.
Well, Netflix.com.
Netflix.com specifically. But you know, here's hoping. I am gonna laugh really hard when one of these days we're gonna, because Caitlin and I watch all of the content. One of these days, one of the pitches from this podcast will be streaming. Well, thank you, Emma, so much for participating in Pitchfire. Excellent job. Madison is greenlit. Netflix.com will be calling momentarily. But now it's time to move into Caitlin's thesis. Caitlin has Caitlin, you've got an important thesis to present this week.
Thank you.
And so I'm going to step out of your way because this is This is important work.
Thank you so much. So I was thinking about the concept of home on the road, and I was thinking of road trip movies, even going back to the novel On the Road. And I was like, wow, that's a really male dominated space. There are some female ones. There's, of course, Crossroads. We love Crossroads.
We love Crossroads.
But even those, there's often like a problem that starts the road trip. It's more done out of crisis rather than just like, we're having fun. And I was like, well, that makes sense because traditionally women have not really been able to just go on the road for a number of reasons. We've only had a credit card for like 20 years and the imminent danger around every corner. But then I was like, what is kind of the women's version of this? And it's orphan movies where you get to move in with a new family, sometimes some new foster friends and sisters. And it's like not fully home yet, but you're like partying and having fun. And I was like, why do I think about it this way? And it's because of one particular show. And it's a show forgotten to time until this moment. The show is called Rags to Riches. The show was an 1980s NBC musical sitcom. Lauren, I have supplied you with some videos, and if you could play the one called Teaser Opening.
The year is 1961, and Nick Foley is a carefree swinging bachelor.
So I gamble a little, make nice with the ladies.
Then to impress his clients, he took in five homeless little girls.
We'll take a shot with the office.
But raising five girls takes a lot of patience and love.
You don't drink this, I'm gonna burn your sneakers.
And what started as a business deal has now become a great deal more.
I want to keep him around here, you know.
Now his life is never gonna be the same.
Watch out, world, because here we come.
I got to see your faces while you were watching that, but please tell the listeners just your initial reaction to this teaser and opener for Rags to Riches.
I'm exhausted.
I feel like I just watched act one of a true crime special.
Okay.
Because
explain. That's normal, but explain.
It feels like that man. That was not a safe situation for those young girls. It feels very, very, very lecherous. It feels very creepy. It feels unsafe in so many ways. I just saw red flags everywhere. I just saw red.
It also made me feel like, wow, we have such little say as actors, right? Going to that set and just like questioning the obviously white male director of like, being Tisha and be like, I just have a question plot wise. Or like season five and be like, are we still gonna call it homeless girls? Like, acquired by this guy. Like,
okay. So these are all great points. So mm-hmm. just to clarify, the five girls lived in an orphanage and they refused to be adopted alone. They all have to be together. The Tisha that Emma references is the very famous and successful actress Tisha Campbell, who got her start on this. It is a diverse group of girls. We love that. However, the show does take place in 1961 and race is never addressed, which is unusual, frankly.
Wait, it was the 60s? We were just watching something that takes place in the 60s?
So it is
the storyline,
right? It's 1961. In the show. By the way, every episode is an hour long.
What?
Well, I just read that they were syndicated. So this means that it lasted more than how many seasons?
No, it was just two. It was one of those NBC then straight to syndication deals. But the show released with the tagline, "If you like Danny, you'll like Rags to Riches." Which I absolutely love, because the construction is usually, if you like X, you'll love Y. But they didn't oversell it. They said, if you like this, you'll also like this. And I love that. Oh, now, I can't explain to you enough. This is a kids bop 1960s musical comedy. So they would take songs, rewrite the lyrics to address the issues that the five daughters are having, and make them... if, you know, if there's sexual things implied, they take that out. So, Lauren, if you could play the "I Love Him," oh, "I Will Follow Him."
Genuinely, I'm so scared. Okay.
I love him. I love him. I love him. And where he goes, I'll follow. I'll follow. I'll follow. I will follow him. Follow him wherever.
Okay, that's good on that one. So one thing about this is musicals usually have rules where, you know, if they break into song, it's never acknowledged within the musical. Or sometimes there are musical performances within a musical, say Dreamgirls, where you know when they're performing. This never has any rules. Like, sometimes people seem to know that people are singing, other times they don't. And for no reason.
Okay, I have... three things I just need to say really quickly. Okay. First and foremost, okay, yes, the blonde chick in the 60s. The rest of the girls, they were fully dressed like 1986.
Well,
viewers
it
being
is like, yes, but I think that is somewhat self-conscious, that they're doing a sort of remix of 60s
maybe
plus 80s.
Okay, that it feels weird now, but I'll give them that. Two, they're all very talented singers. They can actually sing, which doesn't always happen in TV musicals. Mm-hmm. So that's fun. Three, I have to assume, now that I've seen this, I didn't know it existed before today. I have to assume that Ryan Murphy loved this show. And this explains so much.
I think you are absolutely correct. And I loved this show too. And it made my... brain, what's wrong with it today? Also, the little girl you may recognize, Heidi Ziegler, later went on to be the youngest girl in Just the 10 of Us, another like low-rated 80s sitcom. So, Heidi, thank you for your work. The music was done by a man named Mark Mueller. I mean, the music was done by a million acts, but this man named Mark Mueller, who wrote the theme songs to DuckTales and Chippendale Rescue Rangers.
Oh, wow. I love that.
So he is all over it.
For the song that we just saw, because we saw the music video, I just want to point out
please
something that not a lot of people are going. I think that day on set, there was a brown person on that set. Mm-hmm. Because if you see that, if the white lady, "I love you, I love you, chukuri cuckoo," she's behind a fence. And then we cut to the brown girls, and thank God they have a different location.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
Mm-hmm. That's what I got
great
to say.
Point. Yeah. Excellent point. I do want to, while I have your attention, force you to watch one more video. And what I need you to understand is this is a real song, but to me, this is the normal version because I grew up with this. And there's a little scene at the top just for fun.
"We're all going camping."
"Camping? What? Why?
Because it's a good thing for us to share something as a family. We'll get some fresh air.
You know, I used to go camping with Lord Shaftesbury, and it's jolly good fun.
See? It's jolly good fun. We go this weekend.
That's Jeff's party. No!
There'll be other parties.
I gotta finish my movie. It's due next week.
I'll write you an excuse.
What about my bio test? I have to study.
Study in the woods. They allow books.
I have to go find my coonskin cap.
This is crazy. I hate camping. I'm not going. Me neither.
Well, I should be with Jeff on Friday night, but I'll be in a sleeping bag. I say it over and over and over again. This trip is gonna be a drag.
We say over and over and over again. This trip is gonna be a drag. Oh, oh.
Well, I should be home reading. I've got a midterm exam. Instead,
at the end I will be using as a Twitter banner soon.
Wow.
Well, this just really had everything. It had Italian-American stereotype father, British butler, children of diverse backgrounds, all being brats. It really defined an 80s sitcom. The man who plays Nick actually played two different roles on The Nanny, eventually being the love interest of Fran's mom. So we are in rarefied air here. I just think, first of all, I loved this show as a kid, and I kind of thought I made it up for about 15 years until like the internet came back in full swing. And thank you to the man who uploaded all of those to YouTube. It is not two different people. It is just one person was interested in doing that. But I have to say, it's kind of interesting to me, this idea of home. And for something in the 80s, like had Annie, because if you like Annie, you'll like Rags to Riches. You had different strokes. You had Sister Kate was another short-term like foster kids thing. Why were we so worried about orphans in the 80s, and why are we not worried about them now?
No, it's a great call. Punky Brewster, too.
True. Great point.
Yeah. No, there were a lot of stories. You're so right. Like, growing up, it is so... I guess they were... like this. The story of orphans was always sort of popular in children's stories for some reason, but it really did have a big moment in the 80s and early 90s. There's so many of those stories, and it is... Yeah, I don't know, because we certainly still have children who need homes now, and it's actually, they don't often sing and dance. It's actually pretty sad and serious.
But they should start choreo. And they if they could get the choreo going, if they have a Tisha Campbell level talent, they will get adopted.
That is the thing, though. I said it already, but like these kids, these girls, these gals, they can sing. They're good.
Well, as I said, Heidi Ziegler was a very prominent child actor. Another of the girls has worked. She's not as famous as Tisha Campbell, but she continues to work. She was in all the Hunger Games movies. So this is not, these are not nobodies.
Yeah.
It opened doors. This.
Yeah.
The show.
You know what? And somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I can't believe this song has not been used on Drag Race.
Yeah.
Right? Or this is high camp. Like,
oh, the Rags to Riches theme song?
Or this trip is going to be a drag in the style of Rags to Riches. Feels prime for
a
Drag Race scenario.
You're right. There does need to be a drag reboot of Rags to Riches, and then I'll be happy.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, I actually really like that song.
Yeah.
It was fun. The music was fun.
Well, I think the guy in charge of music was really good. Like, he's done a lot of, he has an extensive resume of, television music stuff and Emmy nominations and so forth.
Yeah. What I really miss about what we just saw in terms of style and how it's breaking so many rules, that idea. I don't know if WandaVision is trying to do a lot of stuff at the same time, but it reminded me of a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, I don't know what was happening, because I was not in this country back then. So what was happening politically in this country that there was a need to focus on these stories? Because obviously the need to dance and have all, different sets and invest so much in more than sitting down and getting your writer's room mm-hmm. to unlock and make those plot points really jam together. It was more about the spectacular theatricality of it all, as it seems.
Yeah.
Which I enjoy. I enjoy now more than ever. That's how I go to sleep now. Mm-hmm. I can't see a lot of shows that are, that involve a lot of thinking. I just want to be distracted. Like the style of this show.
Yeah. You know what part of it maybe is too, though, is something I've mentioned on the show before, but after watching that Nickelodeon documentary, The Orange Years, in the 80s, they were just starting to figure out that kids could be consumers.
Right.
And I do think that executives were grasping at straws and people were that anything really works.
Yeah. And that's the top of mind. That's how you get a lot of kids besides a school. Mm-hmm. That's how you get a lot of kids together is they are orphans.
I think it was just hard for adult executives to contemplate how do we squeeze a bunch of kids into a project the kids are going to like. As soon as you, Emma, said what was going on politically, in the 80s, it was all about consumerism. You know what
I'm
saying?
That's true.
Right, right. For you guys, they were distracting us in Mexico with other shows.
Yeah.
Party of Five.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Party of Five is totally part of this. Yeah. In the later, a little later.
Party of Five. Yeah, it was The Nanny was a big mm-hmm. a big hit. Well, that was 90s, I think.
The 90s, yeah. But you're right, the Nanny definitely is an extension of this because we also loved kids without missing a parent. Kids missing a parent needing an adult. Bright colors, bold patterns. Yeah.
Yeah, this idea of who's going to take care of these kids and social class kind of implied in the background. Fascinating.
Well, and you know what else it is? It makes me think of too. It goes back to Wizard of Oz, right? Because what does Dorothy want? A home. What do we assume that orphans want? A home, right? So it's this assumption that this demographic, that's the primary thing driving these younger demographics.
It's so interesting to be watching these shows and hearing you two, because I had a conversation with a comedy writer friend of mine. We're trying to unlock what is the difference between storytelling in America versus Mexico.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Why are we as Latinx writers and comedians, why do we have a lot of struggle to kind of marry those two worlds?
Yeah.
A lot of the shows that popular shows in America, in terms of the formula is so clear
mm-hmm.
and things are predictable, even in that third beat of surprise,
mm-hmm.
it is still within, they're holding your hand.
Yeah.
Even Rags to Riches right now. Yeah. I mean, yes, there are things that kind of come out of nowhere, but thematically they're still in the same world.
Yeah.
Or aesthetically are in the same world. And somehow I'm not an expert on this by any means. I've just, I've been doing this for the past 10 years. That doesn't make me an expert yet. But what I do think is that for Latinx stories, things happened. We just stay there
mm-hmm.
in what's happening. And there's kind of this two worlds that are separated. So mm-hmm. it's it's a little more convoluted, and it doesn't necessarily add up.
Yeah.
It's just a different way of doing ballet.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's like we don't do demi-plié the same way. You know, yeah. It's just like, it's so different.
Yeah. It's fascinating. Caitlin and I have been talking about that on and off because we both are in love with the same French TV show. And we talk about this a lot, about how the way they get the trust they have in their audience is so different than, like, we're always joking around about how awful the American version of the show of Call My Agent will inevitably be when they inevitably do it. And it's so heartbreaking. But I think about that a lot. Like, so many of my favorite series, like when I think about like top shelf art, so TV, so many of them are international, or international from a Western American perspective.
Sure.
Yeah. No, but it is. There's something there, right?
Yeah.
There's something that speaks about our society, and I don't know. I know that we're departing from home.
No, not at all.
It's all interconnected. And honestly, Rags to Riches creators, did you ever think this conversation would evolve? They did. They knew. They were playing the long con. Mm-hmm. They knew. Mm-hmm.
They're all dead, by the way.
Wow.
So thank you guys for going on the journey with me. Look for Rags to Riches on YouTube. That one guy that uploaded all the episodes. Thank you, sir.
We'll be sharing it across our social media platforms. Yeah. Now, Emma, we're almost out of time today, but I do briefly just want to you know, sometimes I come with a real crystal clear thesis. Sometimes I come with, let's say, a confession. And today I'm coming with the latter. And this is, I have to just be really real with both of you. I initially thought I was going to come in today with like a fun look at road trip movies, but I saw Caitlin's thesis and I was like, oh, she's kind of going there with the misogyny on the road trips thing. So I was like, well, what are my second thoughts on this idea of home on the road? And when I tell you that I had a vision as if it were from God of Diane Lane, like, I couldn't stop thinking about Diane Lane. And friends of the pod, you may have heard me say this. I have often, for the past several years, I've been living proudly as a woman who identifies as a middle-aged divorcee. I am neither middle-aged nor divorcee, but if you looked at my closet, the contents of my fridge, or my Netflix queue, you would believe I am. And since it came out when I was quite young, one of my favorite movies has been the movie Under the Tuscan Sun, where after a heartbreaking divorce, Diane Lane goes to Italy for what's supposed to be like a vacation, but she ends up putting down roots and building a new life and investing in a new home. And I couldn't stop thinking about this movie and about her performance in that movie and about how much I love it. And I was like trying to figure out, I was like, what's my actual thesis? What's my actual take? And as I was like Googling and thinking about Diane Lane, I thought of another Diane Lane movie that I love. And I think it's the movie that introduced me to Diane Lane. And it's a film called Indian Summer. And if you've never seen Indian Summer, it came out in the 90s. I have such distinct memories of being in like first grade and going to the AMC theater and seeing the big Indian Summer like cut out for the movie and like being so excited about it. And my parents being so confused. Like, why do you want to see this movie about middle-aged people? And like, I was like, I want to see it. But I have always loved Indian Summer. And if HBO or whoever houses these movies ever released the amount of times that I have streamed Under the Tuscan Sun and Indian Summer, I would be arrested. I would be considered the enemy of the state. But Indian Summer, if you've never seen it, is about a group of friends who all went to the same summer camp as kids being called back to their summer camp as adults by the camp owner to have like a fun weekend. Like, it's kind of like a big chill at summer camp energy. And Diane Lane is in that. And I was like, okay, this is at two different points in her career. There's like young Diane Lane, middle-aged Diane Lane. I was like, but to me, they like sort of like sit in the same place in my like heart and soul. And I was thinking about, I was like, why are these the movies that I'm like, can't stop thinking about? Why is it Diane Lane? And I was thinking about, you know, I knew that I was going to ask the question at the top of the show, like, what does it mean to have a home? Like, what is home? And to circle back to some stuff we were sort of saying at the top, thinking about Under the Tuscan Sun and Indian Summer and what these characters and what these films are really searching for is a feeling of safety, right? And to me, like, any place can be called a home, but for something to feel like home, there's a difference, right? And that's what I sort of realized in thinking about these two movies and these two performances is that, like, it's easy to call someplace home. It's hard to feel at home. And one of the things that I love about Diane Lane is she's such an, like, emotionally available performer. And it's, like, so palpable in both of these movies to, like, go on that journey with her. And you, like, feel it, right? Like, I think the thing that I love about Under the Tuscan Sun is that it's, like, emotion porn. Like, it breaks your heart and you are sad with her and then you get frustrated with her and then you get excited with her. But then, like, there's this, like, breath of fresh air at the very end of the movie where you, like, sigh out with her. And it's just, like, such a fulfilling trajectory. And so my thesis today is that, to me, Diane Lane is home. That is my confession. That is my thesis. And I'm curious, do either of you have a piece of content or an actor who is your Diane Lane? Like, who's your Diane Lane? Who's your pop culture home?
Bette Midler. Bette Midler is my home. Yeah.
Okay.
The Midler.
Wow.
Because I love her, like, Disney comedies from the 80s and 90s. I love a musicality we've learned from Rags to Riches. And even though I think she's a wonderful actress, at the same time, you're like, okay, well, Bette Midler's here now. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. it's the same mm-hmm. person in every movie. Yeah. And I love that. And it's like, that's home. Yeah. Bette Midler, we're safe. I would say secondarily, same exact deal, Whoopi Goldberg.
I do feel safe when she enters.
Mm-hmm. Now, not on The View. Not on The View. On The View, you're in danger. You're in danger, girl, to use her terminology.
Yeah.
But on screen, scripted, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think for me is Tilda Swinton.
Wow.
Sure. Yeah, it's just, I feel held mm-hmm. in okay. a way. I know that I'm not only going to be safe, I also know that I will understand every single thing she says to me because of her articulation and thoughtful, heart into every letter of a word. And she's tall.
Yeah.
And I'm short.
Mm.
That plays into the safety net.
Gotcha. That makes perfect sense.
See her work. It just makes me like, she is in charge. I can unclench my asshole.
And right. She's in charge. That's interesting.
I love that.
Write it.
It's also so interesting too. Like when I was thinking about how I truly have been drawn to Diane Lane in a deep way for so long, but there is something about the fact that she gets like typecast as these, she's not always, but often she plays these roles of women who get to like pick up and start again. Right. Like,
yeah.
She's always doing these sort of like second chapter stories. And this is such a weird thing to say out loud, but like, I've always identified myself as like, I'll be better in my second chapter.
I love that.
And I think it's so funny. Like, I don't know. There's just something, I just love her. And I'm so excited to hear about Bette and Tilda and Whoopi being that for you. These totems, these paragons. I do have one tiny, I wasn't sure if I was going to say this, but I feel like I have to say it. I do have one small tangent that I need to go on.
Please.
I had been resisting the urge to bring up Under the Tuscan Sun on the show. It's something it's always right there under the surface because I'm always thinking about it. But I do have a theory, a fan theory. And Emma, I don't know, you play a nurse on TV, so I'm sure that whether you want to or not, you've been indoctrinated with all the knowledge of all medical TV dramas. But I have a theory that Under the Tuscan Sun, and nobody give me facts and nobody tell me I'm
absolutely
wrong.
Absolutely not.
Under the Tuscan Sun is actually part of the Grey's Anatomy canon.
Here it comes.
Because Sandra Oh, who played Christina, Kate Walsh, who played Addison, and what's his name that was Rory's dad on Gilmore Girls, who was then Addison's short-term boyfriend on Private Practice, mm-hmm. they all appear in Under the Tuscan Sun. So my theory is that Under the Tuscan Sun is actually a fever dream happening to one of the patients in the hospital. They interacted with Addison and Christina, and Under the Tuscan Sun is actually a coma dream. This is a fan theory. I'm throwing it out there. Please at me.
I will never at you. I think that this mm-hmm. is just perfect.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
The tragedy is that this woman never actually made it to Italy after her husband left her. She got very ill. And
Wait. So the mm-hmm. what we're watching, the movie, what happens mm-hmm. is all in her.
That's my fan theory of how right, Under the Tuscan Sun is actually yes. part of the Grey's Marvel comic universe.
I feel like if one of the writers from my show is listening, you're going to see season 4 because it's beautiful.
Well, thank you so much. I am available to be the coma patient for Emma to try to break. So please slide into our DMs.
Absolutely.
I love this.
Well,
you know, Lauren, there's a really, really weird piece of pop culture that ties together everything we've talked about, and I'm not kidding. This was not planned because I did not know what you were going to do your thesis on at all. Mm-hmm. There is a movie, a 1982 film called Six Pack. Let me just read you the quick description of the plot.
Okay.
When race car driver Brewster Baker stops at a gas station, parts are stolen from his race car, which he drives around the nation. Okay. Then, while in a diner in a small Texas town, he sees some people stealing parts from another car and chases the thieves. When the thieves' van goes into the river, Brewster rescues them and discovers they are orphaned children. The kids were stealing auto parts for Big John, the corrupt county sheriff who jails Brewster for breaking and entering, larceny, resisting arrest, and speeding. After the kids help Brewster out of jail, Brewster reluctantly takes the children with him. This movie stars Kenny Rogers as Brewster Baker and Diane Lane as Heather Breezy Akins.
Oh my God.
She is like the head kid. She's like 15 years old in this movie. And she's the only daughter in this group. And she's like really good. And the movie is like very
fine
B movie, but she is like really good. And like she and Kenny Rogers as like the adopted daughter and father are really cute.
Oh my God.
And you feel home. She's bringing you home.
Wow.
Organic way to like just put everything on the cake, let the cake sit. The cake is ready to be served.
And you know who else is in this movie, Lauren?
Who?
Barry Corbin as Big John, the corrupt county sheriff. That's Whitey from One Tree Hill or Maurice from Northern Exposure, however you want to call him. He's
two
there.
TV towns we live in. Two TV towns we reside in. Wow. Iconic. I can't believe I don't remember this movie. It feels like a movie I probably watched. And I probably will watch it and then realize ideas I've thought I've had on my own are actually just images from this film.
Six Pack, Kenny Rogers. Wow.
Well, I'm looking for a deep dive. Wow. This was iconic. Emma, thank you for suggesting Home.
Yes, we loved it.
I can't imagine this is the journey you thought you would go on today, but thank you so much for being the inspiration for this wild ride we all just went on.
We just went on a wild ride, right?
We did. Do you have any final thoughts on Home you want to leave the audience with, or instructions on how they can stan you if they since they've obviously fallen in stan with you? How can they find you? Where can they find you? Where's your social media home?
Ooh, you guys are on it. You guys are so great at what you do. I mean, I know you guys are hilarious, but you also are so smart.
Wow, a pull quote. We got a pull quote out of this episode.
And, you guys know what you're doing, God damn it. Okay, you guys can follow me on Instagram. It's I am Emma Ramos, R-A-M as in mom, O-S. That's it. I haven't updated anything else but that.
I love it.
So please follow.
And you know, we're going to be tagging the hell out of Emma this week on our account at We Stand Social. So give us a follow and you can find her. And we'll be, you know, we'll be posting all kinds of links to her various projects. And so, you know, follow us to find your home in Emma's social media footprint. And folks, you know, something that always makes us feel safe and at home? Mm-hmm. 5-star reviews. Yeah. They cost you nothing. They give us everything.
Yeah. Just put some words down that you believe in.
Mm-hmm. You guys, I can do a transcript of that was so heartfelt and I stand by it. I think this is what I'm going to do as soon as we finish this.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to write it down on a review.
Thank you.
Oh my God. Emma. Wow. Emma.
The guest with the mostest. Thank you all. Thank you all for listening. We love you.
We love you, Emma. We love you, Stan Stans. And we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Sarah Michelle Gellar, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Now the Backstreet Boys are all grown up with their reality.
Cue the outrage.
We are the pop culture professors.
Pencils down now.
Smart people, dumb topics forever.